Hello, welcome to the Mac Show. Yes, we're here to discuss all the big stuff that's gone on in Mac this week, and it's not an awful lot. So it won't be a really long show, and I've got to go out working tonight. So without further ado, starting us off top left in Doc's normal position, but Doc's only got in from work at midnight, so he's not coming. Patrice?
Hey, good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening, or wherever you are.
How's it inside the Arizona oven?
Actually, this week it is quite beautiful. It is a bit on the humid side, like 40-something percent, which makes it less bearable, but the temperatures have been even below 100 degrees, or below, what's that, 36 degrees?
Quite pleasant.
Patrice, you and I have to have a discussion about what constitutes humid, because we
I know
have a different opinion.
Oh, yes. No, I've been other places. I mean, even Koblenz, where I lived before, that was 46% would have been considered very low.
Yes.
And
now, but here, I mean, we have sometimes 5-10%, so.
Why? Anders and I have been doing a camera system together, and we've got sensors on it that measure temperature, pressure, humidity, noise levels, that kind of stuff. And I've been going to places now, and I've got really sad about this because everyone goes, God, it's hot today, isn't it? But no, actually, the temperature is only 21 degrees. It's the humidity because it's 58%. That's what's going on. And I've just, it's like people look at me like, I didn't care, but okay, thank you. I've become a real saddo. Humidity.
Yeah.
But you guys are obsessed with humidity. I think we're going to be because of the way that the weather's going over here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do the heat index. That's the next thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Feels like.
Feels absolutely.
Feels like. Adam's going with the goatee, man.
Yeah, I realized this morning I need to shave. It's way overdue. But yeah.
Go for the goatee, right. Really. We could be brothers separated at birth. But I got
no,
all the
I
food.
No, I can't. This is about as much as I'll grow. It just looks scruffy and nerf-herdish, herderish.
Trim it at the sides and give it some shape, and that'll pass.
But you know from Star Trek, the guys with the goatees are the bad guys.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that fits. I like that role. Now then, how did Fortnite go with Ellis on Tuesday night, mate? I tuned in.
About as well as I thought it would. Yeah, I'm crud at it. But he actually was able to teach me a couple things that actually might help. So maybe I'll get better.
Yeah,
and that was the point.
Get another lesson with him. And this time, stop trying to shoot him when you've got fed up of learning. Because that's what undid you.
You're saying don't shoot the teacher?
Yeah, no. You were sitting there happily. And then all of a sudden, you turn around and you're like, I'm going to get him. So you tried to shoot him. You missed completely. And then he just blasted you within a second. And you were done.
Yeah, I like the parachuting part. Just wanted to do that over and over again.
So, he's good though, isn't he?
Yeah.
He can shoot and build at the same time, which I just can't get my head around.
Yeah, no.
Really
cool. I'm way far from that. But again, he was able to show a couple techniques. And so I don't know how much I'll get into Fortnite. I'm an old school, like Unreal Tournament kind of guy, so... That was much simpler days. We didn't have 27 buttons on our controller. That's half the problem for me is, like, there's too many buttons, you know? When I had an Atari, it had one button.
Yeah, no, that was good. And a joystick that you wobbled backwards and forwards for running.
It was easy. Yeah, that I can handle.
Chuck Joyner's back.
He is.
Wow.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, man, yeah.
Yeah, it's been too long.
What have you been up to?
Work, Mac Voices, life. You know, that's kind of it. A little bit of eating and sleeping in the middle.
How's the golfing going?
Good. Just bought a new driver, so I'm enjoying trying that out and learning how to hit it again.
Which driver did you go for?
Zexio.
Oh, I don't know that.
Yeah, they're a Cleveland golf company, and it's hand rolled Japanese shafts. Precision balanced, you know, all that stuff, but makes a difference. I've gained a good 10 to 15 yards without just by picking up the club.
Oh, excellent, mate. In the right direction, though.
Yes, actually. Surprising thing.
Even better.
Yeah.
And last but by no means least, Chuck Latornis, how the devil are you, man?
I'm terrific. Thank you.
Is this three on the bounce for you?
What's that?
Is this three on the bounce for you?
On the bounce?
Have you done three shows in a row?
Oh, I have. Yes.
Yeah, Turkey.
Yeah, I feel like a regular. Show, lovely.
Show Turkey.
Right. A hat trick.
Yeah.
Once you've been here as many times as I have, you'll be able to understand. You'll be able to do your British to English translations.
Yeah, no, sorry.
I am working on it. I do say that I keep binge watching Monty Python to try to catch up, but it's... But there are more Americans than Brits on here usually anyway, so.
Oh, thanks, man. The British, that was a bit of a dig, wasn't it?
No. it's a global panel, which I like a lot. I get a big kick out of it.
You go and see all your friends. Go and listen to British Tech Network. It's full of Americans. You'll feel right at home.
You're outnumbered 4-1 today, Ewan.
Well, he's not American. He's German.
Oh, he's American now. We claim him.
No. I think you'll find if any German gets into your country, he's claimed you. That's the way it works.
We just don't mention
that. That is true.
The week in Apple, all the stuff that's gone on, can't start with anything other than 20th anniversary of the iMac, 15th of August, 1998. The very iconic image there of the handle on the back of the iMac, and was it going to have a tray in it where you pushed it in, or was it going to have a slot that you slid it in? That was the big debate, and it was the kickoff of a revolution, really, isn't it? I mean, it's a brand line that's still going.
The machine that saved Apple.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Where the hell is the floppy drive, and what's USB?
Yeah, no, of course that was the watershed, wasn't it? That's where it all got canned because Steve said.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, Patrice, go on, mate.
That was the first ever Apple device I can remember. I mean, growing up, there were no Apple devices around. I didn't even know the company existed. The iMac was in like the mid 2000s, but mind you, that was the first device I ever saw. One of those iMacs. And they were beautiful. I mean, I got to like work on one, and I think that's what hooked me ultimately.
Yeah, no, there's a good point from Deepan here as well. Since that day, you've been hard pushed to find beige computer products.
Yeah,
because they all went white goods and beige, didn't they, under Scully?
And we just all pretend like the mouse never existed.
Yep. It kind of didn't.
Oh yeah,
we ignore that part. What a piece of
That's an interesting graphic.
Everything on it was brilliant, but that mouse.
Yeah, the mouse was crap.
There's still people out there who love that mouse for some odd reason that I can understand.
Go to use it, and the cursor would go like the wrong direction.
Yep.
Because you couldn't figure out which way was up, and then like later they added a little divot, but even that didn't help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but still, people loved it. You know, That was the weird thing. I know that there were so many folks that I knew that really liked it, I guess because of the way it fit into their hand.
Mm-hmm.
Really? I never knew anybody who liked that mouse. That was the first thing everybody would replace.
Right. I never knew anybody who liked it who had actually used it. It looked nice, but once you used it, Adam's right. You know, you used the cursor movement to tell you which way you needed to spin the mouse to align it correctly.
You really did. Like you... Oh, wait, okay. I mean, I guess you could use the cord, too, but you wouldn't think about it, right? Yeah. You know, you don't think about that. You're looking at the screen, you go up to use your mouse, your hand would naturally go there, and you'd start, and then, the cursor would go, you'd be wanting to go up to the menu, and it would go down toward the bottom, and you're like, what the...
Doesn't that remind you of the current Apple TV remote?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Suffers from the same issue.
Yeah, no, that is right. Because I'm spinning that in my hand constantly. They tried to improve it with the white ring around the menu, didn't they? But
you still have to look. Ones.
But no, it's still not good.
Mm-hmm.
But
the iMac, brilliant.
There's an
brilliant
infographic
machine.
There, look, of the evolution from 98 to 2000. I've got to say the 2002 iMac, that's still my favorite shape by quite some distance. I love the sunflower iMac.
Mm-hmm. It definitely was the most iconic one.
Oh, that's one on the shelf behind you, exactly right. Yep. Yeah. Well, I can't pick my camera up, unfortunately, but I've got a Bondi Blue 1998 iMac in there that still works with keyboard, and I've got a 2002 Sunflower iMac. on top of the, which it used to have, Ellis used to play on it. He used to watch CBeebies and stuff like that on it when he was a kid.
Is the one you're calling Sunflower the lamp. You're talking about the Luxo lamp one?
We called it the Luxo,
yeah. Mm-hmm. 2002, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, you know it's based on a sunflower, right?
No.
All right. So
I knew you that. Didn't? No,
no. I was walking through Steve Jobs' garden and they were talking about computer shapes and innovation, and he got the idea from looking at sunflowers that are growing in Jobs' garden.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that story, I don't think.
It's from Johnny's own lips.
So I believe you.
It must be true.
Absolutely believe you. But the then you say flower, and I think the flower power iMac that, again, a lot of people didn't like.
Right.
They did the flower power Dalmatian dot design mm-hmm. the same year, I think.
Yeah, right. The funny thing about both of those iMac designs, they were machines you wanted to own. I mean, even if you had a more powerful machine, even now, if yeah. one comes up for, you know, for auction or something at a, you know, at a computer auction, you still have this inclination to bid on it. Not that right. you can use it, but you just want it. And I think that's a real testament to the design and how long it's worked and what it's meant to us.
I'm quite surprised, you know, I go on eBay regularly looking for classic Macs, and I'm always surprised at how many are shown as working. There's not a lot that are shown as parts. Mm-hmm. There's, I mean, maybe that's just a statement of the fact that what's the point in selling a broken computer? But there is an awful lot that are working computers.
Nope. I mean, back when I worked in like Mac service at my university, we got 10, 15-year-old Macs in, and they still work perfectly, and they probably continue to work for like another couple of years at least. There was nothing wrong with them, nothing.
Well, my iMac works. Was the best representation of the beginning of the form follows function, right? The design mm-hmm. ethos at Apple. It's a beautiful design, but it's not just a design for design's sake. It's a beautiful design because of what it does and because of the way things are integrated into it to make using it a better experience. And mm-hmm. Apple carried that through to the Sunflower or Luxo iMac 2 with the swivel. You know, it was gorgeous the way it did it, how smoothly it worked. But the idea was that you can just, you know, move the monitor to a position that's comfortable for you. And what a lot of the copycats never got was that people didn't buy Macs because they were pretty. They bought them because they were beautifully designed, and the look of them and the function of them were both beautiful. And, you know, trying to copy things just by making, you know, sort of gimmicks and things stuck on and weird colors and all that, that happened a lot, but it never really captured the kind of holistic view that Apple design took after that.
And don't forget that was a CRT machine. I mean, you kind of overlook that because of the shape and the colors and, you know, the fondness we all have of it. But, you know, now I think my house is completely purged of CRTs, you know, and if I was going to have one in the house, it would probably be an iMac.
You know, the lampshade was a CRT?
No, he's saying
the original.
I know exactly what Chuck's saying there. Chuck's just said it's a CRT, and I've had to sit there and go, oh, yeah. It is such a beautiful thing that you do forget that it's got 50-year-old technology in it.
That's true.
And that was the kind of time I was working on a project for a company in America. And I said, why aren't we specifying flat panels? Because we're not installing until 2002. And they went, oh, that's going to be cheap. I said, well, it will be by the time you finish this, the way you're going. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, the place went live with cheap flat panels. And they completely overspecified the purchase. Mm-hmm. What about the, because I've got to say, the transition from the Bondi blue style right the way through to the Sunflower is beautiful to me. And then the evolution to the traditional now iMac shape in 2004 was innovative and I liked it. But mm-hmm. it's been a bit samey since then and I haven't enjoyed it as much. There's not, you know, since they've got the L stand, there's not been a lot as much more of innovation, has there?
Yeah, but that, seems to be Apple. I mean, if you look at a lot of their devices, they have a phase where they experiment and figure out what is the ideal shape of this device, and then after that, it's just refining it. I think
by
that
definition,
kind of makes
if there's
sense.
An ideal shape or design, isn't that it? I mean, what more can you innovate if you've hit the ideal?
Well, mm-hmm. I think that's the question, and I don't know if it is the ideal state or if there are improvements. But if you look at the graphic of there now of the evolution, it's always been about getting the computer out of the way and mm-hmm. taking the hardware out of the experience, so that to immerse the user into the using the computer itself, and the computer almost disappears with the latest iMacs. All you're really seeing is screen, and to Chuck's right. point, I don't know where you go from there.
On that note, now that I'm looking at this and thinking about it, because I've had people comment on the iMac, like, where's the computer? Even to this day, some people say that. And I don't even know what other manufacturers are doing in terms of desktop designs. Like, is everybody else still doing, I guess you have the little mini NUC boxes that I'm aware of that like Intel does, like tiny yeah. Mac Mini, tinier than Mac Mini kinds of things. But are other companies' desktops still little boxes? Or
I think
is Apple's,
most of them are. There is, I know HP does a like all-in-one iMac style design. It's actually very similar to it, but well, that's not a bad thing. If you want Windows, you can go this way.
Microsoft did their Surface one that I don't know if it still exists, yeah. the one that pulls down. Are they still making that? But kind of the point is like Apple stuck with that design, whereas that never really did get fully copied or fully adopted anywhere outside the Apple ecosystem, it feels like to me. Like mm-hmm. most guys I know who have a PC desktop would have like a big gaming box or something like that.
I was
going to
say, it's almost like the custom car market, isn't it, for PC boxes now? It's like you buy a basic box and then you rip out all the stuff that's lame and you put in go faster.
But it's still a box,
It's mm-hmm. box is still box. Yeah. There's no. Yeah. I don't know of any all in ones.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen iMac
really
style designs
right?
getting more and more popular now. Like Mac Mini. So little boxes.
Yeah.
There's really no need for that. There's really, for most people, again, understanding that gamers and high end people are a separate sort of category. That trucks category, but. Yeah, I mean, it seems like other than Apple users, I don't know that a lot of quote-unquote average consumers are buying quote-unquote desktops. At least most people I know that are in that category, if they're a PC user, they have some sort of laptop or they have a tablet or mm-hmm. some sort of variant of that. It's just interesting. Exactly. I never really thought about it till just now.
Well, I think the predominant market is creatives if it's in workplaces. Or the iMac is the home computer that sits in the corner of the room for the kids to go on for their own work if they really need to. And that's happening less and less. I mean, my son's friends, I shot some pictures of their production, stage production, and I put them on my website and I sent the drop zone system I've got, and I sent them a link saying, tell your friends to download it here. And it was a zip file. And he went, they can't. What do you mean they can't? Well, they haven't got computers. Well, of course, everyone's got a computer, mate. Tell them to go on the household computer and download it. No, they don't have a computer in their house at all. Mm-hmm. And it's all of them. None of them had a desktop computer in the house at all. Or laptop. They just had phones and pads and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And yet they're probably more connected than they've ever been.
Yeah, because it's always in their hands.
Yeah.
It's not sitting on a desk that you're going to walk away from. I just went on the Best Buy website here just to see what they had for desktops. And I think Adam's absolutely right. I think most people, if they're going to have a computer, it's going to be a laptop these days. There are some all-in-ones, yeah. but then I think the other big market is the modders, the customizers, where you need the big tower or the box that has lots of slots with rooms to put your new cards in and your heat sinks and all that kind of stuff that you want to play with.
Yeah, no, and Apple's not interested in that. The homebrew right. computer club is long, long gone. Apple
Eater, yeah.
isn't it? Yeah. Okay. Most definitely. James is dialing in, he says, which will be great.
There he is.
Uh, Hello, James. Welcome back, mate. You've just missed.
Hi, guys.
You've just missed us reminiscing about the old IMAX. Have you got anything you'd like to add?
The old IMAX. No, they were fabulous. No, nothing. I came in late to the game. Sorry.
No, it's all right. I won't ask you how you've been because you had a rum afternoon, I know. So the next story, Ming-Chi, respected Apple analyst, no less, Ming-Chi Kuo, who works for TF International Securities, said that Apple will get to a $2 trillion company because of its services business, an augmented reality headset, and an Apple car.
There you go. He's throwing a few around there, isn't he? Yeah, just to make sure.
Let's not waste too much time on this bollocks.
If there's a reason for Apple to go to that level, it is Apple Pay.
I think it's services. I think services is a good shout. That's a really good call, but that was obvious. Apple Pay, I think, totally. That's because they're going to be becoming a bank. But the an AR headset, you're having a laugh.
He's close. It's a car as a service.
Yes.
Well, then it's a service, yeah.
I think if we remember the thing about AR glasses when Tim was on stage not so long ago, he did mention about the fact that he sat there and said, well, look, you know, I have to wear glasses. And I think that was a really cool comment. He says, look, I have to. He says, you ask anybody who has to wear glasses, they would tell you they would prefer not to. And what we're saying to them is, hey, have some glasses. You can do stuff in AR. He says, it's a preference which I would prefer not to wear. And I always remember that comment, thinking that was quite a good thing to say at the time to squash any sort of AR rumors, if you like, around the glasses. But I guess people change, though, right?
Yeah, no, true. A great comment from Deepan. If that's their respected analyst, what did their disrespected analyst have to offer?
Well, what about an AR? The AR, all these things sort of combined together start to get interesting to me. So AR, if you have a driverless car, right, if you have an autonomous vehicle that's driving you around, you have a lot of time to delve into services and other things and into and including with, you know, augmented reality. We always think about glasses, but what if every window on that car you were in, because you're not driving, was an AR screen?
I can't see a government passing that.
Why?
That's why? Oh, because that's a Ford Pinto straight away. The screen froze. So why did you drive into the person? Well, the screen froze.
You're not driving.
All right, okay.
That's my point is, like, I think Apple's looking at these sorts of experiences, right? Because it's about the experience. Once we have autonomous vehicles where we're not driving, what are we doing in the car? And I think Apple's looking at technologies to answer that question. Like, what are people going to be doing? You're going to be, you know, consuming entertainment, music, but you might also want informational displays. You're going around, you're traveling cross country or something, your car's driving you around, and, you know, you can bring up services information, or you can bring up point of interest information. You can, and that could be all overlaid in real time. I mean, you combine that with what they're doing with their mapping efforts and the vehicles they have driving around. I think that's a big part of the play is Apple's looking at the ecosystem, not just of cars of the future, but what's all around that. Yeah. And I think that's the bigger play.
Go ahead, Adam.
No, I was just saying that's the bigger play.
Yeah. Yeah. You can be driving in the car and you get, you know, an AR message that pops up and says the world's largest ball of yarn is only 25 miles out of your way. And you can say, Siri, take me there. Right. I think there's going to be interactivity for that and let you know what's on your point of interest, help you decide what your next meal stop is going to be. I think AR is going to be huge. And I don't think we've even touched on the ways that Apple is going to be a part of it. I think they're all in on AR.
And who was it at Apple? I don't think it was Tim Cook. It might have been Phil Schiller that said that the car would be the ultimate portable device. And that doesn't mean that Apple has to manufacture the car. It just needs to be in control of the experience.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I was just saying goodbye to someone.
You know, so for me, when it comes to the whole AR thing and the car and the map reading thing, is what the Google car is, the Apple car is actually doing. And they said about it taking like point clouds, so it knows the distance between the curb and the house, if you like. So it's taken that telemetry data in as the Apple car is going around. So when it comes to AR, they're able to project things that would quite actually be on your street corner. You know, Apple would actually have all the information. So if the AR did become big, they could start projecting these things accurately, you know, on your street corner, which I find fantastic, like virtual signposts, if you like.
Bob Beach has put Reading in the chat room, which is silly because no one in Reading is intelligent enough to use a completely automated vehicle. if you live in Reading, I apologise. That was intended for you. The thing is that always gets me. I'm going to be 70 in 2036. So
17?
70. You deaf git. So I'm going to be 70 in 2036, and I don't see me ever owning an autonomous vehicle. Ever.
Really? I would think that's right about the age you'd want one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. No,
acquired by age 70.
Hang on. What I want and what I get are two different things here, and I don't see mass market availability of autonomous cars in my lifetime if I live to 70. I could be right by the fact I die next week from a heart attack, but that, what I'm saying is, let's assume I'm going to live to 70. I don't see, get me 3 score and 10, I don't see mass ownership of autonomous vehicles in that lifetime.
What about something that would pick you up from outside your house that was autonomous then?
Here's the thing, because where does something stop? Because we have no infrastructure for car stops. So the car is not going to pull onto me drive, because I don't think it'll ever get off again without hitting a pedestrian.
What?
You still haven't got your mic right, Rickard.
That's not me. That's not even me.
That was your dog.
My dog's not here.
No, it might be Patrice.
No, she wasn't barking. I heard someone
the dog
barking
running
somewhere.
Around.
Who's the dog walking around on the floor?
That's her.
That's you, right, okay. No, so...
The car stop thing. Well, we kind of do. I mean, if you look at Uber picks you up wherever you are and drops you off wherever you want to. That is already reality.
Because it's got a driver.
Ewan has no faith in the technology.
No, I don't see the car stop, because the car's got to stop. If it stops in the road, everything else has got to get around it, and that becomes a real challenge for computing-wise. And you look at the industrial estate that I'm on, and if I said, come down here, the thing's got to work out how to get to me, then it's got to turn around in a place that's full of containers to go back the way it came. That's very complex. I just feel there's a lot more infrastructure questions to be answered than just getting the thing to go in a straight line and not kill someone, which is where they seem to be with it.
I feel like maneuvering around cartons and containers and stuff is the easier part of the equation,
yes,
rather than, you know, having to try to watch out what other cars are coming into your lane and next to you and swerving in front and all that kind of stuff. I think, I disagree that they're not going to reach mass adoption in our lifetime. I really think that once these things start to hit the market and are good enough to do that, and that may take a while, but I think you're going to see the adoption really go exponentially. I think there's going to be an inflection point, and then you're going to see just them all over the place. I think it's going to be harder to drive manually once all these autonomous cars are on. I don't think you want to.
This is where I could have a bet with you and say, right, when I get to 70, when I die, there won't be an autonomous car. Damn, I'm going to enjoy spending that $20.
Which will be worth about $4 by then.
And I'll be dead.
Let's hope we're both around to collect.
Make a bet with every single listener. A BTN, and then maybe it'll cover me funeral. I just think that's I don't see him as a respected analyst, is what I'm saying. I think there we go.
No, that's for sure.
Unanimous. Apple says no personal data was compromised in the Australian teenager hacking. First week back at school, some teenagers had a pop and managed to hack into Apple, but Apple said no. And see, now what's interesting for me here is that Apple felt the need to say personal data, because they didn't just say no data was compromised.
No, he got data.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's like 90 gigs worth, I think, was it?
Yeah. Yeah, they admitted that. Huge amount of data.
So what did he get then? He got the source code for the iMac.
I think what he's going to get is a job at Apple.
You really?
I wouldn't put it past him.
When he gets out.
Yeah.
Job somewhere.
Very smart.
That's what he claimed he wanted when he was doing it, so.
Well, yeah, why wouldn't you hire someone like that that is that enthused about your company and has those technical skills?
What happened to wear a decent suit, smile, look intelligent, answer questions?
Now you do sound old.
Yeah. Yes, you did.
I think, you know, you've got to wonder, haven't you, somebody that age, that switched on, that can do that. I always think, well, where the hell would you start? We all know about things like the dark web, et cetera, things like that. But it's, at that age, to be that clued up and go, I'm going to have a go at this. I read it and I kind of had to read it twice, really, just to get over the age of the lad. I thought it was incredible, absolutely incredible.
Yeah. I mean, kids are shocking now. My own son shocks me on a daily basis. It's just, I can't, you know, he came to see the breakfast club, the business breakfast club that I go to on a Thursday. And he stood up yesterday and said, who he was, and he said, I'm here, I'd like two models to do a shoot for a video front that I've got to do for a project. They're going to be between 16 and 20. I want a grungy looking guy and I want a top class looking girl. And you're like, Christ almighty, Alex. He stood up in front of 50 people yesterday, he didn't bat an eyelid.
Confidence, well, good.
At that age, I couldn't count to 50.
Yeah.
I believe that.
Yeah, that's true than you know. That's 90 gig confidential files and access customer account storing information in a folder on his computer named Hacky Hack Hack.
Love it.
I'm not even trying to hide it. Like.
I've changed my opinion. Give the bugger a job. Well done. Yep. Superb.
Well, and the first job you put him on is, okay, fix this hole and then find more.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's not going to be able to do that.
Multiple occasions as well. Right. Access was flawless on multiple occasions.
But yeah.
This is the one you know about.
It is, isn't it? I think that's the worry, isn't it?
There was a story yesterday that I read about household routers. Some stupid thing like 1/3 of all the world's entire world's household routers have got Russian malware on them. Military malware on them.
Yep. Because they're not secure.
Yeah. I got that bit from the story. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
How many people don't bother to change the default password on their routers and other
connected devices?
Way too many.
I mean, it's interesting, again, for probably the third time that I can remember owning a Mac, my computer's got it right now is when I'm in Safari, it automatically opens up a extra tab and I get MacKeep adverts. And I've gone through all of my computer trying to find out what I've got that's making it do it. And I've been through the library. You know, if you go to go, you know, hold down the Alt key and you get the library, or what is it? Alt key and get the library button. And I'm looking, trying to find out where the hell this extra tab keeps opening up. I mean, any help, guys?
It'll save you a lot of time. Download malware bytes and run it.
Malware bytes.
Yep. Malware.
Bytes. Yeah. Because you know that's the third time of owning a Mac. It's just done it now. Just obviously plugged that in. It's done it again. It's interesting, isn't it, that we're still getting these issues?
Mm-hmm.
Well, no. MacKeeper is the work of the devil.
Avoid that like the plague.
Yeah.
I mean, I was giving that to people advice, you know, eight, nine years ago about that. Why is that business still a thing?
Gullible people and people that go to porn sites, and that's what it is, James. It's the cookies from the porn sites that you've been going to. They're the only. Mm-hmm. That's the only place I see. No, it's the only place I ever see MacKeeper adverts is on porn sites.
I talked to someone from our ID department yesterday, and he said the worst sites on the web for like Windows users are porn sites, and they had to deal with them and in the office every single day.
Not so hot for Mac users either, by the looks of James.
Yeah, apparently.
No comment.
And why mate? I've been married for 20 years, mate. Porn is my life.
And this sponsors
But they had to deal with that in the office, Patrice?
Yeah. That's what they told me. They were like the worst sites out there, and they had all the time they had issues with it.
Interesting.
Followed only by the solitaire sites.
Solitaire?
Probably, yes. Minesweeper
sites. Uh-huh. Anyone played Minesweeper recently?
No.
On Windows? Oh, it's still cool.
The other thing that happens a lot to a lot of people with things like MacKeeper and malware and viruses too is when other legitimate sites get hacked or code inserted. As a web developer, I deal with weird stuff. I've seen legitimate sites popping up really bad ads because, you know, they got hacked themselves and some code injected. And I've even seen attack vectors through ad networks. So, you know, anybody can sign up with an ad network, and a lot of sites use ad networks to insert ads, which insert JavaScript code and all kinds of code. And, you know, someone will buy an ad, quote unquote, and then inject into their ad malware code, and then it ends up on legitimate websites pretty quickly. They shut it down pretty quickly too, but in the couple minutes or 30 minutes or an hour before someone figures out what's going on, you know, they have potential, if it's a popular site, to infect, you know, thousands of computers.
If you're running a WordPress site, you have to be really diligent about keeping it up to date, making sure you have a really strong password, because they're targeted all the time by these kind of people. And once they get in, it's really hard to clean your site up.
I don't have the latest numbers, but WordPress is something like 30% of the web now.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yes, it is. I think it's 60% of all websites out there.
Oh, I didn't know it was that high. I thought it was about
30. Yeah, it's very high for web, purely websites, because the web is more than just websites.
Sure. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I remember that the Cirque du Mac was sponsored by MacKeeper, wasn't it, in 2014? And I just stood there, and it was just like, you are kidding me, surely. And I remember poor old Dave Hamilton having to stand up and justify why, you know, they were a good sponsor of Cirque du Mac, and the entire room just felt like it was looking at him going, poor Dave Hamilton.
And wasn't their giveaway condoms?
There was stuff, there was, it was just like, as soon as you walked in and they got these big 12-foot pull-up banners with MacKeeper on it and as the sponsors, they just like, because there was no one in that room that doesn't think that's the work of the devil. The whole event is packed out with people who go, you're having a laugh. Poor old Dave. Yeah. My heart really went out to him. That night. Entry-level 13-inch MacBooks coming, allegedly, made by Quanta from North Korea. Cheap is the word that's used. No quantification of that, clearly. But, I mean, what are we going to say is cheap when it comes to a 13-inch MacBook?
It's the evolution of the MacBook and MacBook Air, I think. I think Apple's going to combine those two things into, and cheap just means low cost. It's going to be the $999 notebook option. Yeah.
New MacBook might be priced at $1,200, says MacRumors in one of the stories. But in the Quanta story, they talk about it cheap in inexpensive notebooks is the word that's used.
Yeah. It's the thing to replace the $999 MacBook 13-inch MacBook Air, which I think is the quote unquote cheap offering currently from Apple. If you want a sub $1,000 notebook, that's what you buy.
Yeah.
That said, they're saying 14-nanometer Kaby Lake CPU architecture.
Yeah. It's going to be modernized, updated stuff. Again, take the bottom of the line MacBook and take the MacBook Air and mush those into a single machine. That's an upgrade, and it's going to be the starting point of the. I think it's going to be the starting point of the MacBook line, and I think the MacBook Air line goes away.
Mm-hmm.
See, now there is a question. There was a story that I glossed over that said about new MacBook Air expected in September. And I glossed over that a minute because I was like, nah, not happening. Just didn't see it. Because I don't see why you would maintain the MacBook and the MacBook Air as a dual line with each other. Because there's no stepping stone needed between the MacBook and the MacBook Pro, surely.
I remember when obviously we were selling these things at the store, and it was such a hard thing when you're trying to compare them to the average punter coming in. What they would see the new MacBook is, oh, it's lovely. You can get it in sort of rose gold colors and things like that. But the minute they saw there was no USB keys for them, they sort of buck away as if it was a technology they probably wouldn't understand. You know, right. It was honestly to see it's something to behold really when you get these customers going, yeah. But no, and you go, well, look, £10 you can get a dongle and it'll turn into USB, and they go, yeah, but why isn't there one in there already? It was almost like technology, it was too advanced for them.
Did they
already
ask you why there wasn't a VGA port in there also?
Oh, no. I think the conversation would run out by then. I don't think I ever sold a single brand new MacBook to anybody. The MacBook Air was the choice of that people. These are people, obviously, who were coming in. They were business people. They were on the run, if you like. They need something light and portable. And the MacBook Air seemed to win every time. You get what I call these rich kids who come in with their parents in tow, and they'd pick up these MacBooks, which were, like I said, these champagne colors and things, because they look fashionable, mm-hmm. and probably would only ever use it for Facebook and things like that. But if you've got somebody who works in an office, the MacBook Air, or so even somebody at a university, you know, it was a great option. The trouble is, those displays and the MacBook Air bezel always looked massive compared to the MacBook screen. You know, I thought the MacBook Air just looks its age now terribly, actually. It probably shouldn't even on the shop floor, whereas the MacBook is a beautiful thing. I actually owned one myself. The only person who bought one was me. There you go. There we are, the dongle out. Book.
I have a 2015-inch MacBook Pro with a bunch of ports. Guess what I also carry around?
That is
you
beautiful.
Know, like, people need to get over the dongle thing. We've had dongles for forever, and we have dongles with our existing machines.
No, I'm sorry. I'm going to take issue there. I don't have to get over it. It's still wrong. I turned up to go to see my printer for some boarding that we've got in an office job where we're doing some branding. I turn up with the images on a data stick. I go to a meeting this morning, and I've brought the film I want to show on a data stick, and I've got my laptop with me just in case, because when I get there, the guy goes, oh, sorry,
man. You are old, man.
Sorry, I've got a MacBook. Have you got anything with USB-C? No, I haven't. Sorry, man. Oh, I haven't got a dongle. Have you got a dongle?
You Dropbox it to him.
Yeah.
No, we airdropped it in the end, but it's just like...
Old.
No, but I've turned.
Yeah, you're.
I've turned up with a thing on a thing. I'd say had I not taken my laptop, we were stuffed. We were absolutely stuffed. Mm-hmm. I had a data dongle with the film on it. Could you just show that? No, I can't, because he's got a computer that's got a port on it. Which, whilst I agree, is a lovely port, and I would love to see it adopted wholesale, it isn't going to be. And I'm sorry.
Where was his dongle?
I've got this one completely wrong, huh?
So he failed you because he didn't carry his dongle like a responsible person.
Yeah, that's it. If you want to be a decent MacBook owner, you've got to carry around something for everyone else who may come near your machine. That's wrong. Well, you can't.
You should have just brought that as a backup.
No, I'm sorry. I just stood at the start and I said, yeah, Steve was dead right to get rid of the floppy drive. You're dead right, Chuck. Well done. I'm not going to do it with this one. They are still wrong to require dongles for everything else because they've dumped ubiquitous ports. It's bollocks.
I disagree. I absolutely disagree.
I don't care whether you agree or not, Patrice. It's still bollocks.
No, I haven't even owned a USB stick in, like, I don't know, 5 to 10 years. The same is true for the DVD drive. There was a time when you had to carry around your DVD drive to external because it was like you needed it every blue moon. Nowadays, you don't. And the same is going to happen with USB-C and everything. Everything's going to move over to USB-C. It's already starting in a lot of areas. And then who cares?
But so this day, I mean,
what
I
Adam
get
said, it's like send them a link. That's what I do.
To this day, I get emails from people who say they need a DVD drive. I got an email this week or last week from somebody who said, I have a 17-inch MacBook Pro and I'm not getting rid of it because Apple doesn't have anything for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting that we're sitting here praising the 20th anniversary of the iMac, where so many things were dropped and these same conversations were being had. And now we're doing it all over again. Is there anybody here that disagrees that USB-C is a superior connection?
No, and yes, Ewan wasn't doing that either. He was saying it is, but it's until it's wholesale adopted, we're in the spirit state. But it was, to your point, Chuck, it was the same with the iMac.
Yeah.
Not this long. It wasn't this long with
the 30-pin connector to the Lightning port.
Yeah.
I think you forget how long USB adoption took from the time that iMac came out till it was really wholesale adopted. It was years.
And if you give people the option to plug in old stuff, that's what they're going to do. They're not going to move forward until they are forced, either by the market or by their own demands.
Yeah, here we go.
I was dealing with USB to SCSI adapters for years.
Oh, sure.
Years. We would USB to VGA adapters and USB to...
And I'm still pissed there's no SCSI.
What happened to the jazz drive?
I've got one. It's still got some really important data on it as well. Bob, here's the point. Apple are not daft, says Bob Beach, because their dongles cost a fortune. There you go. That's the reason.
Oh, my God.
There we go.
It's a big part of their other.
Hang on. That was a polite one. The really insulting one is Patrice has swallowed the Apple pill, says Rob.
Which is definitely not true. I just see the advantages of USB-C, and I wish everybody would just adopt it really quick.
Oh, I totally agree. Amen. I got no issue with that, but they're not.
Well, the way to get people to adopt it is to not give them other options.
It's to be an absolute shitbag. Yes, the way to get
someone
people to adopt
it. Someone has to push it, otherwise it's not going to happen.
Absolutely, and I think that's why the Apple's dongles are priced the way they are, not so they can make money on them, but to discourage people from using them and to help push them towards the new technology.
Which doesn't help because there are like cheap ones on Amazon that you can buy.
Yeah,
but cheap and better usually even.
I had a neighbor who was a barber who would charge $25 for a shave because he didn't want to do it.
MacBook Air is a far superior machine than the MacBook, says Bob, which is right. At the moment, it still is, but I don't think there needs to be a stepping stone.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy a high-end MacBook, and that will take you close to the MacBook Air, the MacBook Pro. So. James says, don't buy cheap dongles. You know you're allowed to say that on the show, right, James?
Yeah, say don't buy cheap dongles. I don't believe in them either. I think they cause all kinds of problems, and people have troubleshooting issues. And they blame the Mac, and it turns out to be some cheap Chinese dongle.
It depends on the dongle. I mean, there are really good dongles from Anker and other like reputable sources, Belkin, that work just fine, and they are not as expensive.
The cheap ones we're talking about.
Yeah. It's still cheaper than what Apple is selling.
Second report says that second generation iPhone 10 and iPhone 10 Plus will support the Apple Pencil. And on the story, they're going back to where Jobs said, who wants a stylus? But that was 2007, chaps. Move on. Even I'm going to say that's BS. Because at the time, I didn't want a dongle. I wanted a decent capacitive touch UI, which you gave me, thanks, Steve. Whereas the dongle was to make up for the fact there was no decent capacitive touch interface. But do I want a dongle? Do I want a pencil to work with my phone? No.
Mm-mm.
I think it's interesting because if you look at the size of the pencil next to the iPhone 10 Plus or whatever, it looks kind of ridiculous, which maybe led me to think that maybe if they made a shorter version of that pencil, then maybe that would probably work. You see, if you look at that picture there, I don't know, it kind of looks something's a bit wrong to me, that pencil looks too big for that display. But if they brought out a smaller version, actually that might work and might get a lot of people on board.
You got battery issues in there, haven't you?
Haven't they already? The education-only Logitech pencil thingy?
Logitech pencil, yeah. Yeah,
that's shorter, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, it is actually. You're right. It doesn't do pressure sensitivity, though, does it, that one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think that's not even the point. I think, you know, Apple is realizing that some people do want the option. You have a much larger screen than when Steve Jobs made that statement, right? I mean, when Steve Jobs was talking about that, they called it a large screen phone, but I mean, it was small by comparison.
It was larger than anything else.
Tiny.
The hack at the job statement is wrong. I will gladly say that's wrong. So let's move on from that. Yeah.
But so the point is like, I think Apple's going to, it's not going to really at this point cost Apple anything, I don't think, or very much to add pencil support to the iPhone, and if it helps them sell a few more pencils to people, I think, yeah, it'd be nicer if there's a smaller, more compact one. I'm not expecting Apple to do that because I think this is purely just an option to quiet the people who have been screaming, we want a pencil on our iPhone, and now Apple can say, okay, it works with your pencil. If you have a pencil, go for it.
And I, you know, it's not a zero-sum game, guys. Right. The only mistake Apple could make is if they said, okay, now to operate your phone, you have to have a pencil, kind of like the
yeah, the
old
that would
palm.
Be wrong.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, you have the – some people – I mean, it's amazing to me how many people will doodle on their iPhone, and it's going to be easier to doodle with a pencil. So fine. If you're a doodler, buy a pencil. But, you know, it's trying to say that one or the other is absolutely it is wrong. There are plenty of uses for a pencil I could see, obviously, on a phone.
Yeah,
not
I mean,
for
we're
me,
way past that.
Yeah. For plenty of people. But don't lose the capacitive touch.
No.
They're not going to take capacitive touch away. Yeah. I mean, the point is too, like, back when Steve was making that statement, we didn't have apps. We didn't have, you know, drawing and note-taking apps and all these other. So the entire ecosystem, the form function, the factor, you know, all that stuff is completely changed. So it's time to allow it. And I think this is just Apple going, okay, yeah, it's time to allow that support. I don't think they're going to put a lot of effort into the overall experience. I think they have the pencil. I'd be surprised if they like do a smaller one. They're not going to put a hole in the side so it's easy to carry around. And the funny thing about it is once this comes out, everybody, that's going to be the new complaint. It's like, oh, we have pencil support now, but it's lame because Apple only has the giant pencil and where do you store it? And, you know, but third parties will come up with solutions for that. It'll be fine. And I think this is a small portion of the phone owning market that is even going to use a stylus or a pencil with their phone, but it's great for those who want the option that they're going to get the option.
Yep. Excellent.
I think Bob Beach's idea is to just stick it behind your ear. What if they brought an AirPod out that had an extendable kind of like an aerial thing on the bottom that you took your AirPod out and you extended it and that became your pencil? There you go. Patent that.
James,
there you go.
Looking for a job at Apple. I think that was also in response to the Deepan comment that said, if you make a shorter version, you could call it the Apple Builder Pencil.
There you go. Magic.
This podcast and all the others is brought to you by a fantastic bunch of people who we really would be screwed up with. TSO host. We wouldn't be able to do this show if we didn't have server support from someone to give us two fantastic servers. One that deals with the live channel and one that deals with all of the other stuff that we've got. We've got a slightly smaller thing than we used to have, so we might have to start paring back the video content a little bit. But TSO have been absolutely amazing. Thank you so much to them. Also, as well, if you're thinking about buying your service, you can transfer any of your services into TSO Host. That's not a problem. And if you pay for it with your existing provider, TSO won't charge you again. They'll just take on the domain control for you. If you want to buy new service, then we haven't got a link to a referral link yet for them, but and we haven't got any offer codes, but they're about half the price of quite a few other people who provide stuff, so you should get an incredibly good deal out of them. So go and have a look, and please, it is so important that you guys shout out about the sponsors, because if we don't say @TSO host, thank you for supporting @BritishTech on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, that kind of stuff, then we're going to lose them. And if we lose server support, we just collapse. So there we go. And the other people then are the wonderful folks down at Telestream who give us copies of Wirecast so that we can do all of the cool stuff behind us, do all the video production, cut backwards and forwards, and all that type of stuff. Great product from them. If you'd like to think about doing it for your church or for a sports venue that you're with, a rugby club, something like that, it would be perfect for that, for streaming games out to the people that can't get to the ground. And don't forget, they also do ScreenFlow 10, which is a fantastic screen capture program, very featured. Give them a go. And again, please say thank you at Telestream for this. Cool.
Right. That one is featured in the App Store right now. Mac App Store, I think.
ScreenFlow 10.
I think so, yeah. I saw that the other day.
Oh, that's awesome.
Is it 10 or 8?
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought it might be 8 because that'll give you 5 licenses, okay. Wouldn't it? Yeah, ScreenFlow 8 is £129.99. That seems wrong. That doesn't seem the right price.
There is a good upgrade price going on right now.
Well, ScreenFlow 8 seems to be a fully featured video editor.
It really is. I mean, I use it for all my training videos. It is a Final Cut kind of type interface. Really easy to use, actually very, very easy to use, and has all these really cool tools for highlighting the mouse and enlarging the mouse. And actually what I really love about it is it makes areas of the screen blurred. And you can change the opacity and stuff. So it's an amazing tool. And it also does the stuff to audio as well. So just incredible, really.
Excellent. Great.
Massive fan.
Time for the proper cool things then. Start us off. Mr. Patrick.
Well, I hope it's okay that I'm going to pick something that is, well, not very technology-packed and costs a fortune. I'm going to pick my espresso machine that I bought. I was debating
what to
pick.
You brought an espresso machine to a Mac show as a cool thing?
Yes. I have an additional thing that's more Mac-like that I'm going to mention in a second. But my espresso machine from a lovely manufacturer in, I think they are in Germany, actually, but the manufacturing is in Italy. The company's called ECM. I think it's Espresso Company Milano, what it stands for. It's the Meccanica for Profi. I have that machine. It is beautiful. It's really silent. I mean, a lot of espresso machines are, well, somewhat loud. They do rattle. They have a pump that goes and whatever. This one is so silent compared to the one I had before. Unfortunately, it's not cheap. It's like, $2,500? Probably the same
Mechanica
price.
Mechanica for Profit, right? You said this is the name of the machine? Mechanica for Profit?
Yeah. Correct, yes.
Profit.
The Profi. P-R-O-F-I.
I think that's the German part
coming through.
At $2,500, it's for profit, believe me.
It's definitely for profit, but it is a beautiful machine. And if you're as excited about coffee as I am, then that's the one.
For the
Mac side of it, because that's actually how I came up with it. iDevices Switch is a beautiful, like, HomeKit, Alexa, I think they even support Google, smart outlet. With a nightlight, really beautiful, really great, works with everything, really fast. I think it's only available in the US, that's why I was kind of hesitant to pick it. But if you're in the US market, iDevices Switch is the thing you should look for. It is beautiful. And the cool thing is the outlet that you plug into is actually on the side. So they have a button on the one side and the outlet on the other side. So, and it fits the standard US two outlet.
I'm focusing on the nightlight there. Are you finding it a bit scary in Arizona, mate?
No, that's fine. But it is beautiful, and actually you can actually change the color and the brightness of that light, which I found funny. I don't know why they would do that, but yeah, it's a nice gimmick.
It's a lovely nightlight, and it's only $40,000.
No, not quite. I think they're 30, if I remember correctly. Unfortunately, I'm going to cost you a little bit of money.
No, you're not, because there's no way I'm buying a $2,500 coffee machine.
Okay.
And surviving the wrath of my wife, mate. Not a chance.
Oh, that is true.
It's bad enough. I've still got James's Sonos 5 down here because I'm too scared to take it home yet.
Yeah, and I'm not going to mention that I paid another $500 for a grinder. So.
Whoa.
What, do they come round? Does that grinder come round every morning and do it for you?
Serious about his coffee.
Yes, I'm serious. I need to coffee. So. Unfortunately, no, Ewan. That would be cool if like a lady came over every morning and made me coffee.
Really
I have
good,
to find
mate.
That.
Really good. No, I've got to get with James's Sonos 5. I've got to wait a bit till when I go back. She says, "Oh, what have you bought?" I said, "Nothing. I've had it ages." Like she does with
part of furniture.
Like she does with the shoes, mate. Adam, what have you got for us, mate?
Oddly enough, I'm going to pick what would seem like a weird pick. And actually, this is something that Ewan mentioned, I think, last time, but it wasn't a pick. So I'm going to steal it as a pick. I did this Fortnite session, like he was saying earlier, with Ellis. And something I didn't know was that if you're a gamer and using Mac games, you can get a PlayStation 4 controller which has a little micro USB on it, get a micro to USB adapter, plug it in, and it will work with a lot of your games. So it works with Fortnite, but it also works if you play Steam games and things like that. It has integration with the Steam system. So if you want a gaming controller for your Mac, this is the way to go. It also works via Bluetooth, but with Bluetooth, you get a little bit of lag. So a lot of gamers really don't like that. So just plug it right in. I will tell you, the first one I got, for some reason, the USB didn't work, and I had to take it back. It was a brand new controller from, I think I got it from Walmart because it was a little bit cheaper than Amazon. But it's brilliant. It works great. You can map all of the buttons and controls to your favorite game. And I had no idea that Mac, it doesn't even need any additional drivers. You can do it on Windows too, but you've got to install drivers. With the Mac, you plug it in and it just recognizes it as a controller in many, many games. And it just, you use it.
Well, the thing that's kind of cool is the fact that I couldn't get the Bluetooth to work at all anyway. So that suddenly became not an issue, not a desire. And I went on Amazon. I bought for $16.99. I bought a wired, no-name PS4 controller and plugged it in, and it worked straight away.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Well worth it.
So if you're wanting to do games on your Mac and you want an actual controller, if you already have a PlayStation 4, just grab it out of the living room and plug it in. Also, I think Xbox One controllers work as well. But
Chuck, what do you have for us?
Which Chuck? This one?
Chuck Joyner. Yes.
Sorry. Okay. Allison Sheridan did a great demo at MacStock of something called iThoughts, and I'll put it in the chat room here. It's a mind mapping program, and honestly, I'd kind of forgotten about mind mapping. I'd played a little bit with it, and I'm one of those people that I can play with software, but until I have a project that I really need to accomplish, I never really pick it up. And coincidentally, I had a project that the mind mapping was perfect for. And it really opened my eyes back up to just how powerful a concept this is. And this was a great way to get it. So I loaded iThoughts on my iPad and have kind of never looked back. It's $11.99, I believe, in the App Store for iPhone and iPad. And it's a great mind mapping program. If you haven't played with it, haven't played with the concept of mind mapping, go check out some of the videos. I believe Allison's session is going to be up on the MacStock ticket, digital ticket, coming soon. But the whole idea is just, go check this out, because I'm finding that I can throw things on the mind map, then drag them around. They merge. It's one of those parent-child things. But it's so easy to do, and it really lets you sort of do a brain dump of a project and then rearrange it without having to do a lot of cut and paste. And again, especially on the iPad, it's a perfect visual tool. And as some of you may know, I'd probably rather have my fingernails pulled out than admit that Allison Sheridan ever successfully recommended anything to me, but it's that good. So
no, iThoughts. I've got iThoughts. Love it. Great software. And they update it as well. Once you buy it, they just keep updating it. You don't have to buy versioning.
It's also part of SetApp, so if you already have SetApp, own it.
Didn't know that.
Oh, good. Okay.
Oh, yes.
You license it.
Yeah. Thanks, Adam. You just saved me the Mac version. Good. I hadn't even looked.
And thank you for the reality check, Chuka.
Yes.
excellent pick. Thank you very much. Mr. Latornis, what do you have for us?
Yeah, well, I'm going to continue on that theme a little bit. So I'm going to help people resist that slow, inevitable march towards subscription-based apps. I think I don't want to get into a debate about whether it's a good thing or not, but for some apps, I just don't think subscriptions make sense. It's getting harder and harder to find things that aren't subscription-based, though. I do a lot of writing. I like to write in Markdown because it lets me write quickly, focus on the writing, and then export it into HTML or whatever the venue that I'm writing for prefers. So it's a very good writing experience. My favorite Markdown text app was Ulysses. Still is. Ulysses is still my favorite. That's not fair to say. It's beautiful. We were talking about things getting out of the way. Ulysses gets out of your way, lets you really focus on the writing. It's well integrated with its desktop and iOS apps. It syncs well. There's so much to love about it. I think it was like $25 or $30 for the desktop app and another $15 or $20 for the iOS. They were fairly expensive for apps. but I thought it was worth it, so I bought them. Ulysses moved to a subscription-based service now, and I understand why they did it, and I feel for the developers. I think they're good people. Their intentions are good. It's not the right move for me. So right now, Ulysses wants, I think it's £4.5 a month for a subscription, or £36 a year for an annual subscription. For a lot of people, I just don't know that that's worth it. So I did a little digging to see if I could find some cheaper alternatives. And I came up with a pair of apps that works really well together. They're by different developers, but they work pretty seamlessly. The iOS app is called OneWriter, and I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes right now. It is a Markdown app. It's very similar to Ulysses. It's got a similar feel. You write in Markdown. You can get previews of what it'll look like in the format that you select. It makes it very easy to use Markdown, so you can use tap commands to put the tags in place so that you don't have to remember them all if you don't want to. And it's $5. You can sync it to Dropbox or OneDrive or iCloud Drive or anything you want so that you can use it across different devices. Really nice, very elegant. $5, one-time purchase, you're done. On the desktop side, the companion app I use with it is called Markdown, and I will put a link to that in the show notes as well. And that's an open source app, so it's free, and it does a lot of the same things, except on the desktop. So a lot of keyboard command shortcuts for the formatting tags that you want to use, lets you preview it in HTML and export it in any kind of format that you want. And again, because it syncs with all those different services like Dropbox or OneDrive or iCloud Drive, you can work on one, you can work on a document on your desktop and pick it up on your iPad, vice versa. The same, you know, the latest version is always in that centralized place, so you can get it. You don't have to worry about versioning. They work really well together, and this is free again. So instead of paying, you know, £4.5 a month for a solution, you can pay, you know, £5 and it's yours forever, or at least until it goes out of date. To me, that's usually a better way to buy this kind of app, although I have to confess that I've been writing a lot lately, and I do like Ulysses, so I'm thinking about doing the subscription. I haven't made up my mind. But if you're a casual user, I think this is a really terrific solution for you.
Do you have SetApp, Chuck?
I do not have SetApp for similar reasons.
So Ulysses is also part of SetApp.
Yep.
So if you get SetApp, if you're going to do a subscription, you really want to look at SetApp first these days, I think, because you may find, you know, five different apps and subscription or not that are in that one subscription. So you can save some money there, too. It's just a general tip for people.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
You're halfway there. You're halfway to the SetApp cost. So if there's any other apps in SetApp that you might benefit from, you may end up saving money.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you're going to go down the subscription route, yeah, you should absolutely look at SetApp.
Excellent pick. Thank you very much. James, go ahead.
Hello. Yes, I'm going with a really niche pick. So I've been doing lots of 3D modeling over the past 2-3 weeks. And as people know, I love it. I love anything 3D. One thing that's really hard to model and get right is trees. Anything to do with plants or actual fully grown up trees. So there's a brilliant company called LabWork. They're a German company. They've been around for a number of years. And they've got these plant kits that you can buy. So if you sort of use, I know this is a bit of a niche market, but it's a sort of 3ds Max, Maya, Cinema 4D, or Houdini, or even SketchUp, they do these plant kits. They're about $149 per kit, but basically they give you this brilliant library that you can just drag and drop these trees into your projects, and you can light them. But what's really good is the fact that you can change their state. Obviously, you can change that as you can with any 3D model, but what's allows for variances for ages and the seasons as well. So you can go from a little baby tree all up to a fully kind of 20, 30-year-old tree. It's just incredible. And as I said, to model something like this on this scale where you can go right up close to the leaves and see all the detail would take a long time. Or this company, €149 in my case per pack, and they've got quite a few packs to choose from. They do trees from all around the world. It's just absolutely brilliant. And again, it would just, nobody could pay me to model a tree, not like this. It's just an amazing thing. And I've been using them for a long time, but they just keep getting better. Once you buy it, they keep updating for free. So if you're doing sort of 3D work, this is definitely a great company to invest some money in, because you never know where you're going to get asked to model a tree.
I know the guys behind it. They worked at the university where I got my bachelor's degree like 10 years ago.
Wow.
So they are awesome. The research behind it is fascinating. They can do photorealistic scenery if they want to. We did like an exhibition once with them, and it was crazy. You couldn't tell that it was generated. It's that good.
One of the kits that they actually do is the subscatter kits. So the idea is if you put a piece of terrain down, like 3D model terrain, like a mountain, and you download this one of their calls called Scatter, and what it does is it displaces the trees across that, not uniformly, so more natural. So you get a more natural environment where trees would be kind of clumped in certain areas. So it doesn't look like it's computer generated. It's actually moved those trees around in a free form fashion. Just incredible company, and as I said, you couldn't pay me to try and model on those trees. They are just fabulous and definitely industry standard.
Yeah. And they're used throughout Hollywood. I think that's why they're in the Berlin area now. And the cool thing is it's not like a texture that they put on it. They actually grow them. So it's every tree is an individual piece. It's like that is the awesome part behind it.
Wow. How ace is that?
I had a bit of a horror moment there where I thought for one second James was actually going to put seeds or something up as his cool thing, and you lot had forgotten that this was a Mac Tech show. bloody space age grinder sex toy thing. My cool thing, dead easy. Seagate 10 terabyte backup plus system. One thing I'm not shy of is buying drives because of doing video constantly. And one thing I'm always running short of is space and backing up time because everything's doubled everywhere across the studio. And then I've got NAS drives that have got stuff as well on them. These are 10 terabytes or £249 sealed enclosures.
Wow.
With pass-through USB 3. So you can plug all your USB 3 stuff into it. They're only USB 3 interface into your Mac, though. That's the only thing. They're not Thunderbolt, and there's no Thunderbolt versions of them either. Otherwise, I'd have had those. But you cannot beat 10 terabytes for $249. That is just...
Wow. Insane.
Insane.
They're fantastic. They're really good. The speed's excellent. And just can't... They're great. I've backed up two of my drives now, one of which was... I've got a MyBook Pro, which I used to, a 6 terabyte one, and for some reason that's kind of been ejecting itself from my Mac when it's been in the middle of file transfers. So it's kind of like
I know a lot of people that are having that problem. I have that problem too, Ewan. So which it might is not random be drives. Yeah,
but then it doesn't mount properly and stuff like that, and it's just like, right. Oh, hang on, I'm going to back this up before it gets too far. So I've made another two backups of what's on it because I can't afford to lose it.
What's in that? Is that That's got to be a couple different smaller drives rated together.
I think looking on the size of it, it's got to be. But it's, having said that, it's not that big. It wouldn't surprise me if that. Yeah, you see, I don't know if that's big enough for two. It doesn't look big enough for two next to that iPhone.
I would say so. It's probably exactly two.
Yeah, it's very flush if it is. But yeah. Yeah,
no, it's 2.5. Look at the thickness. It probably stacked two stacked devices.
Two 5s rated together would be my guess.
Yeah. But even that, I mean, for that price, I think you can't even buy them for that price.
It's very slim. I can attest that it's not a massive unit. I've got two three terabytes in this MyBook besides me, and it's half as thick again as this. So, I'm looking forward to hammering these as well and see what they're like as well with the file exchange on, trying to do live access to libraries on Final Cut Pro. I don't have a single Final Cut Pro library anymore. So every time I get a new job, I make a new library in the folder. So then if I drag that folder out and back it up somewhere, I haven't got to worry about reassociations because it's going to the same file structure. So
smart.
It took me a while to work that one out.
Yeah, it also means that whenever you start Final Cut, it doesn't load all the files.
No, it's loading is just the single library that I click on. And I tend to start Final Cut by double-clicking on the library, so
in the project. Five terabyte Seagate internal drives are, if you can find them, are like $150. So this is cheaper than the two drives. Wow. And you get them in an enclosure.
Well, you can get also as well, I didn't buy it, but there is a... digital recovery, 2-year digital recovery offer as well, which is it's only available on the 8 terabyte though. So if you buy the 8 terabyte with on its own, it's £174. If you buy it with 2 years of digital data recovery warranty, it's £179. So that's a fiver of no-brainerness away, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean you might not need it, but then again, why not?
Yeah, and then they try and charge you expert installation at £59.
What are they doing? I think I could manage to see what they do.
They come and they go, I don't know if it's safe to put it next to that Mac. Might be a bit of IR or something like that coming off that. It's too close to the radiator. Sorry, sir, I can't install it. Health and safety.
Wow.
Where can we get a hold of you, Patrice?
As always, every week here on the Mac Show, and everything I do on thepatrice.com.
Deep Hand's clearly got me. He said, what's the speed like for streaming porn? I'm asking for a friend. At 10 terabytes, that would take me 1,000 years to fill that with Bob Beach. Mate, it's weak for me. Weeks. I'm probably going to go out this weekend. I'm shooting down in Houston, and I'll probably come back with about 700 gigabytes of stills, footage, time lapse, etc. Doesn't take me long, man. Where can we get a hold of you, Adam?
As always, you can find me over at maccast.com. You can look for the podcast Maccast on your favorite podcast app, and on social media, it's Maccast as well.
So. Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Where are you, Chuck Joyner? I'm never Chuck having two Chucks on the same show again. It's not happening.
And you put it side by side, and that makes
I said that last time you were both on, didn't I?
Yeah. Yes, you did.
Yeah.
You can find me at MacVoices at MacVoices.com and on social media pretty much almost anywhere. I'm just at Chuck Joyner.
Excellent.
Find me. Say hello.
Good on you. Mr. Latornis.
Twitter at Chuck Latornis. You can keep an eye out for the writing I'm doing at Macworld and Fast Company, and of course Random Access, 2Ms, 2Cs, 2Ss, where I just posted an editorial yesterday about in defense of a free press, and I'm just going to read you one little line from that because it's important to note. I put a sporadically produced technology website is not the place you'd expect to see a political editorial, but who would have thought that defending the American free press against the charge of treason would be considered political. So it's not techie, but I do hope you give it a read.
Did you see the Danish politician who retorted to one of the Fox News or CNN's female reporters who just said complete and utter bollocks about Denmark? I nearly said Daneland then because I just couldn't remember. Denmark. No. Oh, you've got to find that on Twitter because it's great. It's a little video of him going, well, no, not really right there because, and explains, and it hits all of her counterpoints, and she looks an idiot on the end of it.
Oh, I love it.
Brilliant. Well done. And last but by no means least, Mr. Rickards.
Thank you so much. You can find me on Twitter at James Rickards at the moment, and that's it. Try to be here on Friday.
And you're writing a How to Follow Briefs for Dummies, aren't you? Book.
How to do what?
How to follow a brief for dummies.
I wouldn't know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
If somebody gives you a brief and says, perhaps this might be nice,
yeah, but
that doesn't necessarily mean I want it like this.
Mate, you have not been round the block enough on brief. If someone says, perhaps we could do this, it means either you do that or I'm not paying you.
Mate, you know it looks good, so shut your face.
It does look good, but she hasn't replied yet.
She's probably fell over with how great it is. Anyway, we're losing the chaps over this. Come on.
No. So I gave James a bit of animation to do. I said, maybe we could make the tree grow on the thing. Perhaps we could make the tree grow, sorry. So he came back with something today, and it's completely different. I'm like, which bit of the brief didn't you get? He was like, you said perhaps. I said, yes, but you said, bollocks, I'm not doing that, effectively. it was all good jest though. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. Sorry for sniffing through my nose for most of the show. We can follow us at British Tech on Twitter as well as, and we'll be back again next week on Wednesday for the live shows. Note Wednesday, not Friday. So both shows will be done on Wednesday, and then the following week I'm having a week where I'm not doing the shows. Got too much on, and then we'll be back again in September. Have a great weekend. Enjoy it. Thanks for listening.